The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another rousing rendition of the UAB Director's Chair. He is the UAB AD, Athletic Director Mark Ingram, for the UAB Blazers. They got a lot going on today. Of course, we'll record the show NFL Pro Day. We got Vandy, UAB, and the NIT later on tonight. We'll talk about that. Regardless, when you're listening to the show, you can hear all that information. Mark, how you doing, brother? Everything good?
Man, I'm great. Thank you, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing great. So several weeks ago, we talk a lot of UAB here, obviously. We talk a lot about collegiate sports as a whole as well, and I love having you on, not only because you're a friend, but you're an athletic director. I love the way you can pull back the curtain on some things. You talk to coaches, you get X's and O's, and that's great. But I really like to get the bigger picture of what's going on in college sports, and we'll certainly talk about that. But several weeks ago, somehow we got into classic rock, maybe because we're on TKR. We have over 100,000 people who have downloaded the TKR app. They love their classic rock, but we have all these great shows. And you decided you wanted to talk about your favorite vocalist. So we did like the Mount Rushmore of vocalist. Then we did frontmen. Today, you want to do your top four bass players. And the great thing about this is it's your list. It's your top four guys and it's my top four guys. And, yeah. And we're trying to stick it to classic rock. There aren't really no rules here. And so first of all, before you get into your first bass player, I want you to tell me what exactly were the parameters for picking your four bass players?
Well, you know, bass players are unique, right? These guys are helping keep the rhythm of the music. They don't always stand out in an obvious way. In some cases they do, and I think the people on my list did for the reasons that I'll share, but that's what makes it hard. And so yeah, I tried my best to keep it in the rock category, but I have one in my Mount Rushmore who probably is not, but we'll see.
All right, so you know, I picked my guys who I thought were the most influential in the platform of classic rock. Is Paul McCartney on there? No. He's a bass player. He's with the best band that ever played, the Beatles, but he's not on my Mount Rushmore because I don't think he's one of the best bass players ever. Now, obviously, right, he was a great singer. So it's just to kind of give you an idea where I'm going, because I'm betting that, and I know you're a classic rock guy, you probably will know all four guys on my list. I'd be surprised if you didn't. But when you're talking about Sting, Geddy Lee, Wyman, McVie, Flea,
here we go.
Willie Dixon, McCartney, Jack Bruce, Bootsy Collins. I mean, we go on and on and on. So I'm excited to see who you come with, and I'm gonna let you go first. Give me your first cat as your.
I've appreciated the honorable mention opportunity. Well, can we do honorable mentions? We'll do our Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, here we go. So honorable mention, I'm going to go with Les Claypool. Mm-hmm. Les Claypool played for the band Primus, which is not classic rock. but man, that guy could shred, and he was really unique, and he's kind of a zany guy. Uh-huh. But his ability to play that instrument is just off the charts great. Another one from one of my all-time favorite bands, Motley Crue, which is Nikki Sixx.
Yes.
Nikki Sixx, I don't know, would be considered to be some, you know, incredible player, but he probably wrote every song for that band, and certainly most – he did write most of them. So you're talking about one of the most popular rock bands of all time, and he played bass for them and wrote a lot of their music. So I've got him in my honorable mention category. You just mentioned Bootsy Collins, who I've got – Bootsy, who's an Alabama native, and but Bootsy played for George Clinton and the Parliament Funkadelic, and then he had his own band called Bootsy Collins and the Rubber Band, which was great. But Bootsy was a really soulful, funky player that, like a lot of these guys, I think played. He really helped change the style of the way it went from just being like, you know, strumming the instrument to really making unique sounds from it. Another guy that I love, and I almost put him in my Mount Rushmore, he's right on the edge, is Lemmy from Motorhead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what a great voice. And, you know, I love that he sang, and he's like spitting venom, you know, like is the way he sang, but a great player too. And, just a great sound and a great, great old band. Another one that was on the edge for me, Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath, a great player, You know, that was, I don't know the Black Sabbath gets enough credit for what Ozzy Osbourne became, but boy, they were a great, great rock band and certainly fit into the classic rock category. I got Chris Squire from the band Yes, another fantastic player, that I think, you know, as we all get older, people start to forget people like that, but really unique in his ability, super talented technical player, that I thought was exciting. Another guy, and did you mention Jack Bruce
I
from
did.
Cream? Did you
Sure
mention
did.
him?
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
So you think of him and Eric Clapton in the, you know, the talent between these two people, over the top, just over the top good. So then I've got a guy named Doug Pinnick from King X, and
Great
he just did
band.
play,
Great
right?
band. And they just came out with an album about 3 months ago. Great band. A lot of people, Black Flag, a song we play here on Tony Curry Radio. I love that band.
They're great, and you know that dude plays a 12-string bass.
Yep.
So you know, if listen, if you just can do that, you're worth mentioning. And God rest his soul, Cliff Burton from Metallica was a phenomenal player and might have had the first bass solo I ever heard. And I think it's interesting to you know, another conversation to not get into too deeply, but how might Metallica have been different had he not died in that bus crash? And because he was more edgy, you know, metal type music, I'm not sure they would have ever had the Black Album, which obviously was huge for their success. And I think Jason Newsted, who's not on my list, but I think Jason Newsted that replaced him, first of all, you got to replace an incredible player. Jason was good, really, really good. But he was more mainstream in his style than Cliff was.
No, they're
And so no, sorry, I've got one more that I'm going to mention, and it's Sting. You mentioned Sting. This is my honorable mention. So Sting, great, great songwriter. I think there's a lot to be said for a guy that can play the instrument and sing at the same time, which is really hard to do. And I mean, this guy's made music for, you know, decades.
What's
And
amazing is you mentioned Sting, Geddy Lee, and Paul McCartney, and I would venture to guess that a lot of people, maybe half the people out there listening, didn't even know they played bass. I mean,
Yeah,
a lot of people just know
yeah,
Geddy Lee is the singer. They know Paul
yeah,
McCartney is the singer. They know Sting
yep,
is obviously the head of the Police, but they don't even realize that they're bass
right.
players, which is
Yeah, I'm
amazing.
with you.
No, and you know, I kind of went through my honorable mentions. Those were my honorable mentions that I mentioned at the top, and I'll throw in Michael Anthony with Van Halen, a guy who
I know.
I was like, and I wasn't sure if that was, and you actually, one of your honorable mentions is one of my top four guys. You want to take a stab at who it is?
Well, I think. Is it Jack Bruce?
No, it's not.
Okay,
And
what do
so
you
I might as
got?
well start right there. You mentioned Chris Squire. I just think that when it comes to, if you listen, and Yes is one of those bands you just don't hear on the radio anymore. And
I
it's
know.
really unfortunate when you're talking about Yours Is No Disgrace and You and I, the 10-minute clip, which used to be just I mean, I used to love playing that song. I've seen All Good People, Roundabout. I mean, just listen to the bass in Roundabout. Lord, I mean, it's
Yep.
unbelievable. Starship Trooper,
Yeah, blow
The
your mind.
Fish, and you're talking about a guy that was obviously in the band for 45 years, aggressive, dynamic, melodic. He played with the plectrum, the thing that went on his thumb. He would actually tap it with his thumb after he picked the string, causing those harmonics. His style influenced Geddy Lee. Geddy Lee would say, "I would never have played the bass without Chris Squire." Robert DeLeo from STP, from Stone Temple Pilots, said he learned his lessons from Chris Squire.
Wow.
John Deacon of Queen said he
Yeah.
learned from Chris Squire. I mean, consider those guys.
Yeah,
Pretty
that's amazing.
amazing. And I guess the last thing, I saw them in the 80s in Louisville, but then I saw them at the BJCC Concert Hall where they were doing the Yes album tour, where they played like two or three albums in succession, which was really cool because, you know, part of going to see a concert is obviously being surprised at what they play. But when you know those songs are coming up, that's even more surprising to me because, first of
Yeah.
all, you don't know how they're going to attack it. And second of all, to know that, oh my gosh, the third song on the second side is one of my favorite songs. You actually get to hear these songs, it's amazing. When they did Closer to the Edge, I couldn't take my eyes off Chris Squire. I couldn't do it. I just, he's just such an intricate part of what Yes was. But that's going to be my first of my Mount Rushmore. Who's your first person?
On Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned Geddy Lee, so he was not my honorable mention. Geddy's in my Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
He has a sound that you kind of love or hate, and quite frankly, I don't care for it. But I know, and a lot of listeners will be like, "Oh my gosh!" But it just wasn't my thing. But I totally respect them, and I respect him and all those that entire band. Their talent level is, they if they weren't musicians, they'd be building rockets and stuff. They were just so intelligent. But just an incredible player. So I'm gonna start with Geddy Lee.
All right, there you go. And again, we always talk about those groups of kids you had in high school. You had your soft rock kids who never got any. You had your hard rock kids who were the coolest in town. Then you had your Adam Ant weirdo Devo kids. And then you had your Rush.
Adam
You had
Ant.
and then you had your Rush bunch. You had those weirdos, the
Yeah.
people that were into Rush. And
Yeah.
little did I know they were going to be scientists and rocket scientists and stuff as they got older. All right, I don't want you to freak out, and that is your pause here for freak out. But I'm going with a guy named Bernard Edwards. I've been following him my
Love that.
entire life. I don't know if you know that he. Who he is, but I mean, if you listen to any funk from the 70s and early 80s, you will know Bernard Edwards. Of course, he was the lead bass player for Le Chic, Freak Out, Good Times, Dance, Dance,
Yeah.
Dance. A lot of people don't know that he was actually the bass player in Upside Down from Diana Ross, played with Sister Sledge and We Are Family, played extensively in the studio with Debbie Harry and Blondie during their times. Played with Robert Palmer, did all those Simply Irresistible, Addicted to Love, played bass on all those songs, and just also played with the Power Station, the power group that, of course, Robert Palmer put together. Played with Adam Ant, played with Rod Stewart on six of his albums, played with Duran Duran, and get a load of this, in the midst of all that funk, was the bass player on Air Supply's first three albums. So this is a guy who can pretty much did it all, and most importantly, was the co-writer of the first rap song that ever was, and that is Grandmaster Flash's Rapper's Delight. If you look on the album, it is, and I'd say a hip hop, a hibbity the hibbity hip hop, don't stop, I'm rocking. I could do the whole thing, but I mean, I think about great bass players who were really, and really in the 70s and 80s, I mean, he was kind of the front of Chic. I mean, he did some vocals, but for the most part, was a great bass player. So I'm going with Bernard Edwards. Who's your next one?
I'm gonna go with Flea
Oh, yeah, you
from
go.
the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Flea has a great kind of a real funky sound, like Bootsy Collins, like some of those bands, and of course he was just insanity on stage. I shouldn't say was, is still, but Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I thought he led, he drives their music. You know what I mean? He's not a rhythm guy,
No.
even though that's his role. That they, I think everything kind of comes around him. Everything in that, in their music and that band, it centers around Flea. So I'm going to go with Flea from the
And
Red Hot Chili
he wears a
Peppers, my
sock.
second guy.
He wears a sock very well too.
Occasionally wears a sock in a place you don't want to see.
So
Occasionally
I
does,
went
you know.
back as opposed to like, and again, we were talking about John McVie. You mentioned Sting, Geddy Lee, and Wyman and Flea and Willie Dixon and Paul McCartney and all these guys that played bass. I went back and listened to some of the classic rock tunes that really influenced me and who played bass for those bands. And Steely Dan is one of those bands that I just absolutely love.
Awesome. Love them.
A lot of bands, if you ever go to a concert, you're going to hear the song Time Out of Mind, which is about chasing the dragon. It is the most played song pre-concert because it is known
Really?
instructionally, yes, it is known instructionally as the best song ever produced to make sure that everything sounds right, from the Tiffany to the piano to the saxophone to everything in that song, Time and Amount. And of course, Walter Becker was the bass player for Steely Dan, but Walter did not play the bass in the majority of Steely Dan albums. Pretzel Logic, The Royal Scam, Asia, Gaucho. Do you remember the song Black Cow from Asia? This guy named Chuck Rainey did all those things. He wrote the 5-volume complete electric bass
How
player
about
instructional book. He's the most recorded bass player in rock and roll history. He's been on, Mark, over 2,000 albums. The guy
Get
played
out.
with Smokey Robinson. He played with Little Richard. He played with Little Feat. He played with Joe Walsh. He was on Jackson Brown's live album. He played with Quincy Jones, Aretha Franklin, Joe Cocker, George Benson. He played with Louis Flippin Armstrong. That's how long this guy's been around. The most recorded guy ever. And, you know, Steely Dan never toured. They never toured because they just didn't want to go on the road. And they were making their money.
It's too much work.
They were making their money. Yeah, exactly. They were making their money by their recorded albums that they put out.
Yep.
Well, if you're a session player, you get paid by the session. You don't get any you don't make any money if you're a session player. You make the money to play on the album. So Walter and Donald obviously were making all the cash. And then they would get these session players and ask them if they would go out and do you know live shows, and then they get paid. So the session players just came in, played their parts, and got out. And Chuck Rainey was a huge part of Steely Dan's success. If you go back and listen to some of those albums I just mentioned, he would certainly be one of those guys on my Mount Rushmore. What's your next?
I'm going to go with Billy Sheehan.
Okay.
Billy Sheehan,
yes.
Was with Mr. Big, and he was with David Lee Roth when David left. And went solo.
David Lee Roth had a hell of a band, did he not? He had Stevie Vai. He had Sheehan. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, they were unbelievable. Yeah. They were unbelievable. And, you know, I've never met David Lee Roth, but everything you read about him is he's just incredibly egotistical and self-centered and hard to work with. So I guess that's true. I don't know. But if those guys could have stayed together, the music that they did make, I loved every bit of it. And, you start listening to some of the stuff, Addicted to That Rush, some other music by Mr. Big that just, I thought, and again, Billy Sheehan he took things to another level. He played solos as a bass player and he could play so fast So anyway, I love Billy Sheehan. He's on my Mount Rushmore.
There you go. He's Mark Ingram. This is the UAB Director's Chair. We're talking classic rock. We'll be talking about NFL Pro Day here in just a second, about the UAB basketball program, other great sports. Of course, you go to uabsports.com. Hear this show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. And wherever you get your podcast, we're on every major industry out there. Tony Curry Radio Podcast, TKR Podcast. The show is doing fantastic. All right, my final person on my Mount Rushmore, and while I've taken session players and people like Bernard Edwards that people probably didn't even know about, Chris Squire, they certainly did. I've got to go with the Ox. I got to go with Thunderfingers. Bill Wyman said he's the quietest man in private, but the loudest man on stage. It's got to be John Entwistle. He, of course, has been voted as one of the greatest bass players to ever play. A lot of people don't realize he started playing the piano when he was 7 years old. He played it for 3 years. He got out. Then he started picking up the French horn. He also played trumpet throughout his entire life. He played a lot of trumpet on some of those wonderful albums there from The Who. The amazing thing is he actually started his first band with Pete Townsend called the Confederates. I don't know if you remember this, and it was a jazz band. Could you imagine? Pete That's Townsend awesome. In a jazz band? Is that pretty cool? And the thing that and I'm not glamorizing this because it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But if you do want to live in infamy, that's how you live, and that's how you die. I'll never forget it because I had John on my show in late June 2001, prior, about 6 months before The Who is supposed to go on the road in 2002. And the night before The Who was to start their worldwide 2002 tour, they find him at the age of 57 in a casino hotel room with a hooker, with piles of cocaine and alcohol and pills around. And of course, was passed away and found cold. They said it was a heart attack, but a lot of people said, you know, he had some clogged arteries, but there's a lot of things that can clog those arteries. And I'm thinking to myself, man, to go out in infamy and obviously it shocked the world, first of all, because it was the day before The Who was supposed to go on the road. Let me tell you, folks, 21 years ago in 2002, The Who were still as big as they were back in the 70s, but he inspired Flea. He inspired Geddy Lee. He inspired Pearl Jam. He inspired Metallica. Mm-hmm. He inspired Oasis. I mean, everyone that ever played bass knows who John Entwistle is, and he's my final guy on my Mount Rushmore.
I'm so glad that you included him.
Yeah.
Because the only reason that I didn't is I was afraid that my list was getting too long. And, you know, I had so many front men and vocalists. And I thought, well, gosh, Tom doesn't have enough time for the show for me to keep. So that's a great choice. And you know, maybe I was that way on the vocalist because did you know that I was a vocalist? I was a singer and a drummer.
Were
for
you
two
really?
Different bands. Did you know this?
Yeah. I did not know that. Seriously, what was the name of your band?
Yeah, the first band, a brief stint with a band called Super Loop. Great guitarist, driven, great drummer, great bass
now,
player.
Now, how old were you when this was happening?
Super Loop would have been right after college, and then right after them, another one called the Yard Goats.
The Yard
so
Goats.
Super Loop and the Yard Goats. I was briefly with the Yard Goats.
I love that. That is fantastic. Yeah. That is.
But, so that could be why. But yeah, Super Loop, a bunch of great players. Not so much the Yard Goats. My last guy, my last Mount Rushmore is this one's one you don't know. So this is a stumper for you. Is a guy named Jaco Pastorius.
Okay.
Jaco Pastorius was like a jazz fusion guy and more of a studio guy. He was with a band. He was with a band called Weather Report.
Yeah,
he was with
them.
A band called Weather Report, and did a bunch of collaborations with like Pat Metheny and Joni Mitchell. And this guy died. He was 35 years old. You know, he died in the late 80s. But he was more of a jazz bassist. But I'll bet you that if we could go and ask all these bass players, what do you think of Jaco Pastorius? And they would probably all be like, oh, he's the best ever.
Yeah.
He was that good. And sadly died so young. And so the world doesn't know the guy really. But he was just an incredible player. Go listen to something from Weather Report and listen to this guy play, and it'll blow your mind.
That is fantastic. What a great
Jaco
list.
Pastorius.
So next week we're going to head to behind the set, right? We're going to do some drummers?
We're going to go behind the set. Yeah, we're going to bang around on the drums a little bit, on the skins.
All right, I love it. He's UAB Athletic Director Mark Ingram. So wonderful to have him on every single week here on our great show and our podcast, one of our most listened to shows here. You can listen to these podcasts wherever you get your favorite podcast with Tony Curry Radio or the UAB Director's Chair, and certainly it plays live here on TKR at least 5 days a week. All right, let's talk about some UAB sports, uabsports.com. The UAB Blazers, of course, are looking good in the NIT. When we record this show, they're going to be taking on Vanderbilt later on tonight. I think I saw they're a very, very small dog later on tonight in Nashville. But it's been a great season for the UAB Blazers. You know, and there's something I look at, and we talked about last week, you know, are these kids inspired? And you brought up the great point. Hey, ask these seniors who will probably never play organized football or basketball again, you know, if they're excited about continuing to play. And you know, how many wins they got now? 27, 28?
Yeah.
So when you look at these and you're adding, first of all, more practices, and then you're looking at that win total at the end of the season, I don't care how you get it done, man. If you can add three or four more wins to your total at the end of the year, it really bodes well, not only for your overall record, but for your brand of UAB basketball. So congratulations to UAB Blazers. Something else huge going on, and I know Trent Dilfer's probably down there. He's loving this as well. But UAB's Pro Day is going on today as we speak. And I know that Dwayne McBride, who obviously set all kinds of records for the UAB Blazers, was one of the top running backs, certainly in yards per carry, but overall yards as well for the UAB Blazers. He was a huge part of that wonderful offense they had, got banged up before his pro day. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, you know, and I think Dwayne is the best running back in the class, and I'm biased, obviously, but, you know, here's a guy who didn't play in the bowl game, and he didn't play in game one against Alabama A&M. And we had a big day that day, and he likely would have had a big day offensively, and that would have pushed him over the edge in terms of all of his metrics and all of his numbers. I think he got robbed of the Doak Walker, in my opinion, but that's just me. So I'm excited for Dwayne. He had a little injury, a hamstring issue that he's working through. I'm told that he feels good. What all he does today, I'm not sure of, but we've got every team represented here, and he'll be here with all of our other seniors, and we've got a bunch of guys from Trent invited Miles College and Alabama State, Alabama A&M, Samford. There's a bunch of guys who are going to come try out for these scouts, and you know, Coach Dilfer was able to leverage his relationships and get everybody here, get all the teams here, get good representation. And so, there's 64 scouts, but somebody, at least one, and in some cases more than one from every single team.
And can you talk just a little bit about the differences between, obviously, an NFL pro day and the combine? I know that a lot of people don't like the fact that some players don't get in the combine because they're like, okay, if you're a first-round guy, why wouldn't you be in the combine and show your wares? First of all, depending on how long they played in college, you've seen everything they have to offer. But the big thing about the combine is the unknowns. I mean, you're throwing to wide receivers that aren't yours. You're throwing on fields that you're not comfortable with. And they're basically dictating. Now, listen, if you're going to get the big money, I understand you have to do things that, that you don't always know what that defense is going to be throwing at you. But in a pro day, it's a little bit more controlled. Can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, you're right. You just said it. So if you were a quarterback, for example, you can ask a certain wide receiver that you know their speed. You're comfortable with the way they run a route. You could say to that receiver, hey, man, will you run routes for me? Maybe a couple of guys, will you run routes for me at my pro day if I'm the quarterback? And it does. It relaxes you. It creates a level of comfort for throwing. And the receiver would say the same thing. I like the way that guy – I like the way Tony throws a ball, the velocity or lack thereof, whatever it might be. I'm confident in his ability. So when I run around, he's not going to overthrow me because he knows me, you know. And, yeah, the environment is important, but – it's just about getting an opportunity. They only invite so many to the official NFL combine in Indianapolis, and there's a lot more players out there that need to be seen and deserve to be seen. And, you know, a lot of times skill players like specialists, like kickers and punters, will frequently not be invited to the combine because they're trying to see just how fast is that defensive tackle. You know, there's some other factors that go into it, things that they want to – you know, they want to interview a player and see how they are. And I know Dwayne went up to the combine, so good for him. And that certainly is going to bode well for him, having had an opportunity to be there and get that invitation. So this is a great opportunity for these guys today. And it's really cool when you're looking around the building and you see coaches and scouts with all these NFL logos on their shirts and jackets. And not a humble brag here, but I just remember doing that as a player, and it's cool. I mean, it's a cool experience. And for our underclassmen, they get to watch it, you know, and to see the type of attention that is going to be here today. They get to watch that and think about, you know, hey, I'm a sophomore. I want to get ready. You know, I got 2 years to get ready for this. This is going to be me one day, you know? And so it's a great motivator for them as well.
I still can't believe, I go back to Nick Saban's first year here at Alabama, he didn't have one player drafted in the draft. I mean, that's just remarkable. And now it's 10 to 15 guys. And I also can't believe it's been 18 years ago since Roddy White, of course, was picked by the Atlanta Falcons as a first round guy in 2005. But you've had Joe Webb, you've had Matt McCarris, J.J. Nelson, Kenard Backman back in 2015.
Oh, we've got a ton of players.
Alex Wright went in the third round last year. So for a guy like
Jordan Smith,
I mean, it's just unbelievable. And then when you look at Trent Dilfer, who obviously has got the brand as an NFL guy, which cannot hurt when it comes to recruiting or getting guys at the next level, because he's probably got some phone numbers. He could call some guys and say, listen, I got this special kid that I think is being overlooked here. And the fact that he's won a Super Bowl, I think, just bodes well for the UAB Blazers. But for a guy like Dwayne McBride, just how big of a deal would it be to see a kid like him get the accolades that he deserves and be able to show his wares at the next level?
Well, I totally agree with you. And I was just out at practice before our podcast, and players are coming up to me telling me, you know, I love it. Hey, Mr. Ingram, hey, how you doing, man? Hey, man, I love this. So they're enjoying practice. They're enjoying kind of a refreshed sense of a new scheme, new offense and defensive scheme. Just the approach to practice. They really feel like there's great accountability, which is important. And we all thrive with some structure. You know, we all thrive with that. And so it's just a new look on how we do things. And the players seem to be responding really well. And practice is upbeat. They're moving around and they're looking good, man. So I'm excited for the season. And you know, get your season tickets now, as they say.
There you go.
Get them while they're hot.
So if So if two of your old bandmates walked into some soul kitchen and asked for a chicken and a loaf of bread and said, we're getting the band back together again, would you get the Yard Goats back in the band? Would you get them back in the garage?
The Yard Goats were better at just drinking beer. I don't know that the Yard Goats were really much of a band, but I thought where you were going with that was give me a bottle of anything and a jelly donut to go. That's what I thought you were going to say.
But you didn't start the Super Loop. You didn't start Super Loop until after college.
I'd go with Super Loop. No, listen, Super Loop. If I get a call from Super Loop tomorrow, I'm sorry to the Blazer fans. I'm out of here.
But if
going back to Super Loop, one of those guys.
But if you're going to start, a band, you do it in college because you know what comes with that—the ladies.
Yeah, I didn't have time for that.
Really, the ladies, the band.
listen, you're talking to the best long snapper in you. Tennessee football history.
That's true.
And if you don't believe that, you don't believe that, you just call my mother, and she will tell you that I was the best in the history of the program. Call my mom.
You should have a band called the Long Snappers is what you should do. that would be a classic name, the Long Snappers with the Yard Goats opening up. Mark, great show, man. We'll get into Drummers next week. We'll talk more about UAB. Hopefully we'll have a victory going on later on tonight. And are you going to Las Vegas if they do?
Oh, of course. I'm going to Nashville to see us tonight, and I'm excited. I mean, look, Coach Kennedy's done a great job, and I love watching this team. They've really come together these last couple of games. I mean, and frankly, they had before that. They just had an off night, unfortunately, in the championship against Florida Atlantic, who's clearly a great team going to the Sweet 16 themselves in the NCAA tournament. And so it was a bad time to not play well, and they played off the charts good, FAU did. So, you know, I'm excited to see our guys. I love watching them play, and we really cut down the turnovers. You know, we had 19 turnovers against Southern Miss in the first round. But fortunately, Southern Miss had 24.
Yeah.
And so, but we only had 6 against Morehead State. And so that type of play, if we play tough defense and can prevent ourselves from passing it to the other team, we can do all right. You know, we score. And Ty Brewer, we seem to have players, different players step up at the right time. And that's, you know, at nights where we've looked good, you know, we played Southern Miss and KJ Buffin had a night of his life. Yeah, then we play Morehead State and Ty Brewer has the night of his life. I mean, and they're not the only two, but just different guys stepping up. And now that's going to force Vanderbilt to defend these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They've been double teaming Jordan Walker, and that's been effective and really helped prevent his ability to get to the rim or to shoot from the outside. But these other players who do absolutely have the talent to do so, if they have a night that can take that pressure off, well, all of a sudden, we look pretty good, and the other team doesn't have an answer.
If you make it to Las Vegas, don't pull a John Entwistle on me, okay? I need you next week.
I can assure you that I will not do that. Okay, I can assure you that.
All right, man. Hey, take care of yourself.
Thanks, pal. Have a great week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.